Welcome to the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Show, where we tackle violence against women and girls through education, empowerment, and hope. Join Kate, a survivor and advocate, as she shares insights, strategies, and stories that inspire healing and action. Together, we'll break the cycle and pave the way for a future of safety and strength. This show contains a trigger warning. And now, here's your host, Kate Beasley.
So welcome back to another episode, and I'm rejoined by my friend Jen.
Hello.
Hi. So last week we finished off on the case, breaking down the case of, that's covered in season two of The Jury. So on this episode, we're just going to go into a little bit more of, I mean, we covered a lot of the facts around that case last week. But today we're going to go a little bit more into how things were handled in the courtroom, I guess, and what we saw in the courtroom between the jurors and what the comments that they made, the expert witnesses, the other witnesses, like the brother and the friend. So we finished off last week on the brother. Now, I found his behaviour a little bit concerning in that courtroom. Very concerning in that courtroom, not just a little bit. It was a very, very concerning in that courtroom.
Yes, and the friends.
Yeah. Very, very defensive. I mean, his attitude when he was being cross-examined was disgraceful. Really disgraceful when he was pushing about his brother's temperament and his drug use and his volatility.
You could certainly see, couldn't you, the sort of attitude that they had, certainly towards like women, referring to the barrister as love and darling and things like that. And I, you know, that would have absolutely followed through to Ryan in that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. If he can be so, so reactive once when the buttons were pressed and he was probed about something that he was hoping to, well, when he was trying to paint a positive picture of his brother, if he could react like that in such an environment, that tells me that this is, well, we know it's always childhood trauma. We know it's, you know, it roots back to that anyway. But that tells me there was issues within their environment growing up. And if his attitude is like that, well, it's highly possible that his brother's was exactly the same.
And flat out misogyny as well.
You
can see, like I said, the way that they see women in just the way that they were, you know, speaking to that barrister.
But what I found strange is that why was he not questioned? Why did nobody bring up? Why did the brother? There was a lot of emphasis put on why Sophie, or real name's Emma Jane, why she left him to die. Why wasn't the brother on the stand asked, why didn't he call and get him help? Considering he was the one that helped carry him in, and he made reference to his breathing sounding very strained. Why?
I mean, I suppose that's a mistake on the defence's part, isn't it?
They
perhaps missed that. But I mean, whether they did raise that or not in the real trial, I don't know. Obviously, we didn't see all of it. There have been parts, you know, maybe they did, but I would have thought that bit would have been shown. And I suppose also, you know, he's not the one on trial, is he? I suppose.
It's still a question, though, because I mean, why should all the responsibility be put on her? She hurt me. It wasn't just her responsible.
Absolutely.
You know, they all left him to die.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were firmly placing that on her, weren't
And
they?
even the neighbor, well, the neighbor made a comment to say that she saw, she heard him say, "My heart is bleeding." And didn't she say that she saw blood on the t-shirt? I'm sure she did.
Yeah, they all saw blood.
And so why didn't they call an ambulance?
It's
There was
baffling.
opportunity for other people to do it. It did, it should, it, all right, she should have called an ambulance sooner, but yeah, but why didn't other people?
Absolutely.
It, yeah, just that doesn't sit right with me.
And she was, she was in a clear state, clear trauma
Yeah.
response, not really understanding where she was, what happened. Do you know what I mean? So
Yeah.
it's difficult, isn't
Yeah, but no, the brother's attitude was absolutely disgusting on that stand.
And his and Ryan's friends
Oh, his brother's friend, his
were
friends as
all,
well, yeah.
yeah, they were all
Yeah.
just as bad. I
Yeah.
find it really sort of like shocking because they showed some video evidence of not just him sort of throwing her, Sophie, to the ground, but there was also the video evidence of Ryan starting fight with other men as well. And I was just absolutely shocked. Like when you sort of like think about the jury, there was a guy on there and he had said to the other jury members after they had watched that video, "Can you honestly say that you saw any aggression in that video? Was he really being aggressive?" I was thinking,
Yeah.
yes. How could you not see that? And he's literally stood there saying, like, "Well, I couldn't see any aggressive behavior." What?
Yeah.
What? Oh, yeah, just weird.
You
Just
had to pull him off him.
yeah,
And you can
absolutely.
see clearly in the CCTV footage, you're pulling him off him.
Yeah. So I just find that absolutely shocking how some people can watch that and not see that there was aggressive behavior there. He thought it was m male banter, apparently. So
Yeah, with a
I
random person that you just
yeah. Good. Yeah, it's just
yeah.
I just didn't get it. I was sort of gobsmacked.
The expert witnesses.
Yes, let's talk about the
That
expert witnesses.
is a, I mean, we chatted about this before, didn't we? I think the time for expert witnesses to step in and provide an impartial expert opinion is before CPS make the decision and send it to court. Because after that, they're not impartial, are they?
No.
Because they're not going to be they're not going to be paid to show up as an expert witness unless they are on board with the narrative that either side is pushing.
Exactly. And that's why there were two. There was one for the prosecution and there was one for the defense. And, obviously they were going to be psychologists. We saw that coming a mile away, didn't we? That there was going to be a psychologist coming in, and they would be looking to diagnose or not Sophie. They say that one of the reasons somebody can get a life sentence or a manslaughter charge over murder is when there is a mental illness, okay? Most notably for women, it would usually be a personality disorder that they would be diagnosed with. Why can complex trauma just be enough?
Exactly. Why do we always have to assign a label? Why do you have to be mentally disordered for to validate diminished responsibility and a loss of control?
It's
It,
just
it's and then to suggest as well that alcohol doesn't re isn't really taken into consideration. We all everybody knows alcohol impacts and impairs judgment. Because that's why that if it didn't, well then why then in which case everybody should be allowed to go get absolutely legless and jump in a car behind and drive wherever they want. But that's against the law, and it's against the law for good reason. So why would you not take that into consideration as a factor to consider We never take anything in isolation, but it's a factor to consider in when in combined with all the other see other thing other pieces of the evidence and the patterns that we can see. We don't say in isolation it is, in combination with everything else, what happened. We want to know what happened before that loss of control that was drink fueled in this case.
So I mean, so there were two, weren't there? There was two psychologists. So there was one for the defense and then there was one for the prosecution. Okay. So the one for the defense, so she has spent some time with Sophie and she came up to the conclusion that Sophie had a borderline personality disorder. And then the second psychologist was for the prosecution, and he came up and he said that he did feel that she had a borderline personality disorder, but he said it was mild to moderate at best. And his view was that the sort of main element in it was alcohol.
But we don't take that into consideration.
Yeah, and he wouldn't take that into consideration as a reason for why she would lose control.
Which in my book, the way I view cases like this and incidences like this, neither of them were accurate. They were both, neither of them were right because, drink, she one thing we know about Sophie's or Emma's history is that she had complex trauma and she was using drink to numb out, to numb and self-medicate those symptoms. Well, that's only going to shine a great big spotlight. It's a mood enhancer. It's going to shine a great big spotlight on the wounds that are very, very that go deep and long, way back into her childhood. And his behavior towards her was only was a catalyst to those wounds. It was triggering those old wounds every single time. And if she's under the influence of alcohol, it is going to extend out any window of loss of control. So they were both wrong. She's not mentally disordered. She had a loss of control due to the environment that she was navigating at that moment in time.
And this is the problem with having a psychiatrist or a psychologist coming in as an expert witness, especially when there's two. It shows the issue with it. It shows that there is no sort of like science base behind a diagnosis of a personality disorder for somebody, because you can have two psychologists, psychiatrists come up with two completely different answers. So, there is an issue there, isn't there? There's no science backing any of this. And you could go to a psychologist, you could five different psychologists, you get a different diagnosis from each one, a different medication from each one. And these witnesses have been, these expert witnesses have been brought in, one by the defense, one by the prosecution, to feed their own narrative. But the difference in their opinions just goes to show where the problem is, doesn't it, really?
And this is exactly why I will stick by it. This opinion is that the jury panel will be better suited to being a mix of various different professionals from various different fields, from psychology to neuroscience to law, all the trauma-informed expertise. Then that's where you would get expert insight that is objective and impartial that would put into question and or put into question or validate and reinforce the original decision that's been made by CPS. But I think the time for having an ex any expert assist is before is to assist CPS with their decision making. Look, you can't we can't all be experts in everything. We can't. But unfortunately, CPS and the police In fact, no, it's not just CPS and the police. It's every part of the safeguarding container. They profess to be experts in everything. Well, unless you have studied the brain, you are no expert in behavioral responses, in behavioral psychology. You're not an expert in that. So why are you professing to be one? You should then be consulting an outside expert to assist you with your conclusion, because they're not experts in the law either. You are, supposedly. So combine those skills together to come up with the best decision and, do what you're supposed to be doing, which is making a decision beyond reasonable doubt. Well, you're not making a decision beyond reasonable doubt a lot of the time anyway. So, to bring in an expert witness at the time of the hearing just to reinforce your agenda or your, because you don't want to be proved wrong, isn't the right thing to do.
I
It's
mean,
not.
there was even like issues with, because there was a police woman up on the stand as well, wasn't there? And the one who'd done the dash
Oh, well, their approach
with
was terrible as well.
yeah, so Sophie answered no to all of the questions in the dash. What and how common is it for somebody who's being victimized by a domestic abuse perpetrator to answer no to those questions? Like, dashes are refused all the time. All the time. That doesn't mean that she wasn't being abused, but that because that police officer said that on the stand, because she was questioned, she said that. Then if you go back to the jury room, oh well, they said no. That she said no to every single question. So no, clearly she wasn't a victim of domestic
How do
abuse.
they know that he hasn't persuaded her to, oh, well, she's called the police now. Well, now you need to backtrack.
Yeah,
Well,
and maybe Sophie wasn't in a place to be able
no.
to want to report him at that time. She loved him, didn't she? She
Well,
didn't
she
want
called the
to get him
police, didn't she? She called the police,
to end
but
the situation she was in at that point.
yeah, and she and they came out. So, within that time, between her calling and them coming out, he could have said, got under her skin and got her to. I mean, it's very similar to what happened with a case that I stepped in on with Stafford. They asked the way to know why she withdrew two statements. Well, one of them was because she was pregnant, she was vulnerable. The perpetrator had contacted her via social media. I'm so sorry. But it's because of my childhood. There was all the sob story. And but if you hadn't have done this, then I wouldn't have done that. And persuade her to withdraw the statement. And she said, "Well, what? Why am I going to say? Just say you've got mental health problems, and you made it up." So that's what she did.
And so
So how do
then,
we know it's not a situation like that where he said, "Right, now you need to backtrack on what you've just done now," and what we know for the best form of defense is attack. So her attitude allegedly towards the officer, what are you doing in my bedroom? That sort of attitude, like dismissal, avoidance. And that seems to be the common theme of her. I think that seems to be a defense mechanism for her anyways, avoidance, avoid, avoid, avoid. It's not happened. It didn't exist. And I think that's what she did there is, what are you doing? What are you bothering me for? Well, can you at least let me get dressed as if she's, well, completely forgetting that she was the one that called them in the first place, because she'd done something and that now actually she had to backtrack on. The best form of defense was attack and have a bit of an attitude,
The problem is,
which.
though, when you're hearing this sort of stuff in a courtroom, as a jury, as the jury members, as you could see, they just, because they don't have that knowledge,
No.
even ones who have been through domestic abuse themselves, and so they have understanding of it, they're questioning all that, aren't they? Because they don't understand the reasoning behind why Sophie would say no, because perhaps maybe they said yes to their dad, maybe they gave all the answers that they, you know, needed to, and things like that. Because Sophie said no, they're like, oh well, she, you know, clearly there wasn't anything then. And that's the problem with having jury members that aren't trained in trauma properly. Just because you've been through domestic abuse yourself, it doesn't mean you're an expert on it.
And that, I could keep saying, who is to say, just because you've been through a similar situation, just because you didn't respond in that way, doesn't mean to say that that person's re reaction response isn't understandable. I mean, I've been through a similar situation, but I didn't respond in the same way, but it doesn't mean to say that I can't understand why she would behave in certain ways.
Absolutely. And that's what I said last week about sometimes, you know, other people who have been through domestic abuse could potentially be more judgmental than anyone else because they feel like they know how you're supposed to act when you're being abused. I've had it before. I've had people, when the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard case was going on, I've made a comment. And I had people messaging me, well, you've clearly never been abused then, have you? You've clearly never been abused. You clearly don't understand. And I'm thinking, what? Like, what? So, and I, you know, and I think this is what has, you know, happened in this jury, with Sophie. You know, you've had a couple of people who have been abused by perpetrators in there. They've acted in certain ways, in their lives, and because Sophie didn't act the same way, they've brought their internal beliefs and biases out, and they've judged Sophie
Well,
in
and it's like you can have two siblings exposed to the same environments within the home. One could turn out, act out aggressively, and the other one could be very quiet, withdrawn, submissive. They're both trauma responses. Both of them are trauma responses. They're just coming out in the different ways. Just because you haven't responded in a particular way to a certain environment doesn't mean that somebody else is going to respond differently. And nobody can say how we're going to react in a certain situation unless, once we're in that moment. And what our breaking point, if you could experience the same situation over and over again, and the final time could be your breaking point, and that's where you just snap. We've heard it over and over. We've heard it lots of times, haven't we, where people have snapped over seemingly the most minor things, whereas the more extreme things where you'd expect them to react, they haven't. And it's not about, for example, do you remember that case of the old woman who rung the police, and after she'd stabbed her husband, and she said, "Oh, please don't save him, please don't." Do you remember it?
I think so.
And then that was over. She'd snapped over a flippant comment he'd made up over the tea, apparently, and it was nothing to do with the tea. It was all the other things, the cumulative compound effect of all the other things, and it was the comment of the tea that was the breaking point of, that's it, I'm done, I'm done. And you just, it's that, and it could have been in along with a particular look or a particular tone, again, that triggered that response in her. So, nobody can say what people's breaking point is, because one person's breaking point is not going to be the same as the next person's. We're just going to break for a short interval, and we shall see you after the break.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato. Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month. Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back. So we're just going to look at some of the, because when we're considering, is the jewellery fit for purpose? There's too much bias. There's too much emotion, personal emotion. There is too much bringing personal experience, past experiences and comparing. Well, I didn't do that, so I wouldn't expect them to, other people to react in that way. There is a lot of personal bias. Now, I actually made more notes in terms of the comments in the jewellery in season one than I did in season two, but you did, didn't you?
Yeah, I made quite a few. I just find some of the comments from the jury members absolutely just infuriating. Like, I was just infuriated. So, I mean, let's talk about, like, some of the so when the nan was talking about seeing the abuse that Ryan was perpetrating against Sophie, I think it was Stacey, she comes out with, well, you know, she couldn't have been that scared for Sophie because she didn't do anything about it.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, come on.
Yeah,
come on. When the ex-girlfriend Lucy was speaking about Ryan, and we know initially that she was talking about him being, you know, a great partner and boyfriend and this, that and the other, and then when she was being cross-examined, it started coming out that he was actually beginning to become abusive towards her. And then, you know, Stacey turns around and she said, oh, no, I had to stop listening. She was a walking contradiction, that girl. I had to stop listening to her.
You can't stop listening to evidence. But you're responsible for, it's like, and that's why you're like, oh, yeah, talking nonsense. I'm not listening now. I'm switching off. Well, you can't afford to switch off. You cannot form an opinion until you have heard all of that evidence.
And she had clearly formed an opinion, and because
all of them had,
and because of the turnaround in the evidence of Ryan's abuse towards his ex-girlfriend, Stacey didn't want to listen to it. She'd already made up her mind. She didn't want to listen to that. Yeah. Like, that was really, really important evidence. Really important evidence.
I mean, albeit some of them who had formed an opinion had been consistent with that opinion throughout, and as it turned out, it was the correct opinion. But even them, they should not have been forming any opinion until they had heard all of the evidence. They should have remained impartial. You know, they bring their own personal bias into it. You know, perpetrators, You know, men who see their own behavior in other men are more inclined to defend it. And, you know, the women, well, we're either overly empathizing or just completely saying, well, I've experienced this so that I wouldn't expect anybody else to behave in, I've not behaved in that way. Well, I don't expect anybody else to either. It is murder. Well, no.
I actually found a
No.
couple of the guys that were on there, some of the most level-headed ones on there.
Yeah.
So it was the union rep, I think was his was he was that Tommy, the union rep? I found him very good. And I found there was a younger guy, I can't quite remember what his name was. Dan, I think it was. He spoke about, you know, he had had a past where he had, you know, overcome sort of feelings of anger and things like that. And I found him quite good as well. And you know, he chopped and changed a little bit, but he was listening to the evidence. And I found him very good. But you know, when it came to, there was an older guy, I can't remember what his name was, and then there was Stacey, and then the other girl who had been, she had had a perpetrator who had been sentenced to 10 years in prison herself. But just I find the way that they made up their minds very, very early on. They stuck to that. They didn't want to hear the evidence against what they believed. And when they did hear evidence that aligned with their view of murder, their attitudes, they were like, yes, and like smiling and
Yeah, see, I'm
smiling.
right.
And
Yeah.
yeah, and I just find that really,
Yeah.
it grinded my gears
Yeah.
a lot, that did.
Yeah.
And then you had the domestic abuse support worker, and I found obviously she was very lovely. She supports, you know, she understands a lot. But I found she was very much leaning the other way, you know, the acquittal way,
Yeah.
again, before hearing a lot of the evidence. And that, you know, that's problematic as well.
Yes. Because either way, there was accountability on her part, even though we can understand that what would drive her to do it, ultimately a life still being lost. So, you know, it's not acquittal, because there is fault on her part, particularly where the drink, as we said in last week, we always said, you know, she chose, knowing that she was volatile under the influence of alcohol, she still chose to have a drink, knowing that the environment that she was navigating was very triggering for her.
But I mean, she had you know, she had made that decision on acquittal like very early, though, hadn't she? Before she listened to all the evidence, the same as the others had, you know, made the decision on murder before they'd heard the evidence. I suppose, you know, at least the support worker, she was open to listening to some of the other evidence, whereas, you know, there was a handful who weren't. Can we please talk about the strangulation and some of the stuff that was said about this strangulation? Because again, that was something else that really was quite upsetting. I don't think anybody quite in that room understood just how serious like a strangulation is. You know, Stacey said that, you know, we had all these comments about, well, you know, she should have done this and she should have done that, and I would have done this and I would have done that. You know, she'd made a comment that, you know, why didn't Sophie phone the police and tell them, oh, you know, he's been grabbing at my neck, he's grabbing at my neck, so I did this. You know, I'm thinking, grabbing at her neck, does she even understand what a strangulation is? This isn't just a grab at somebody's neck. You know, I was just absolutely infuriated by that, because when somebody has their hands around your throat, that is a very clear sort of message of I can kill you now, I can kill you right now. And to have somebody squeezing the life out of you, that is frightening. And you
There
think,
could be lots
actually,
of
you're
reasons
gonna die.
why she didn't say it. There could be numerous reasons why she didn't say it. You know, she, you know, we when we are in a state of distress, that may not have been the first thing that she would, I mean, to be honest, I think she was in a state of disbelief. I think she was in a state of disbelief that things had escalated as far as they had. Because I think there was probably many, many, many occasions where things had got very, very heated between them, and it hadn't gone this far. And I think she was likely in a state of disbelief. So she's in a state of disbelief as to how far things have gone. Well, the last thing on her mind is going to be, oh, he was grabbing at my neck, he was doing this. That would be the last thing on her mind.
Yeah, but he wasn't just grabbing her. My point is that Stacey had said, why didn't Sophie, after she had sort of like stabbed Ryan, one of her reasons why, you know, why Sophie should have like called 999 straight away. Why should Stacey said, you know, why did Sophie not phone 999 straight away and said, oh, he was grabbing at my neck, so this is why I did this? Because that's just not what happened. And you know, and my point is as well, the way that Stacey was describing it as he was grabbing at my neck, and you know, she clearly is not appreciating what a strangulation is actually like, because when somebody is being strangled, they think they're gonna die. They think they're gonna die. So somebody, you know, you've got the girl in pink, what was her name? The support worker. So she was saying, if somebody strangled me, my animal instinct would come out. I would do this and I would do that and I would kick off and I would save my life. And most people probably would, you know, try and save their life from the strangulation. But you know, in my case, when I was strangled, I resigned myself to the fact that I was going to die. I wanted to die and I didn't bite off. But you know, his hands were around
Some
my neck
people may just go
for
into
a second.
freeze. You know, they may not
Exactly.
even have that thought, I'm going to die. It'd just be freeze. It'd just be,
Yeah, exactly. But it was just the way that it was being described
You know, like
by
in the
the other
wild, you know,
members.
animals can play dead.
Yeah.
You know, and that's an automatic response. So you're not necessarily going to go into fight flight. You could go into freeze and just like, if I just stay completely still, then it's going to be all right. I'll
They were also
survive.
saying things like, why didn't she just stab him in the leg instead? And things like that. And I'm sort of thinking, because when
Wouldn't
you're
be thinking like that. No, when you're reacting, you wouldn't be thinking, oh, well, maybe if I just do
they're
that.
assuming that she was thinking logically in that time. And
That's the
yeah,
whole point. She's not thinking logically.
exactly. And this is why we need jury members who understand what they're talking about.
Well, we're just going to break for another interval and we shall see you after the break.
The station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle, and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at UKHealthRadio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tennis Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the Skin Comfort Formula online and in stores now.
UK Health The station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back. So before we wrap up on this episode, we're just going to cover a couple of more comments that were made by the jury, because a lot of them are really, really not appropriate at all, and in some ways it's probably as well that, you know, they are, you know, all these, they, you know, they're not televised because, you know, that, you know, because, and this is why they need supervised if we're going to stick to this model.
I mean
there was loads of bullying, Jen, as well. I mean, how much, I mean, there was very, very dominant and strong personalities in that amongst that jury who were trying to bully the more vulnerable and weaker characters into agreeing with them.
Yeah.
Well,
that's just not fair, is
it? No, it's not.
Especially when, you know,
you don't want to go to a retrial.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's people in that jury room who really, you know, they really do want to do a good job. They want to follow the law like they're supposed to. And then, you know, people coming up behind them, making them, you know, submit into other ways of thinking that might not even be in line with the law, you know, making people question what they're thinking, and things like that. it's just not on. There needs to be an adjudicator or, you know, something. To have that cloak of secrecy around what goes in a jewelry room and to then be able to see, you know, that happens all the time. These might have been programs on the telly, okay, but that is what goes on. Yeah. In those jewelry rooms,
which in essence there is coercion going on within that jewelry room, which is a very crime. What part of the crime that they are tasked with deciding a verdict on? Yeah. Well, it doesn't give us much hope, then, does it?
No.
If we have coercive individuals amongst the jury, you know, if somebody's giving their views on something, well, don't try and bully them into changing their opinion. You can try and put your thoughts across, and, you know, potentially they're, you know, they can look at it from a different perspective. And if that changes their opinion, great. But don't bully them into it.
No. I mean, there was shouting, you know, screaming and name calling and all sorts, like, you know, Tommy the union rep had gone in one morning and he had gone in and explained what he was thinking about that night, and then I think it was Stacey coming along and said, how dare you start my day off like this, trying to change my mind, and all he was doing was talking about what he was thinking about that night. He wasn't trying to do anything. Yeah. He went like totally mad at him, and I was just like that is just, this is like a court of law. This is someone's life that they're deciding on.
It was like a
school playground, and I was gobsmacked.
Yeah, I mean, that they are tasked with such huge responsibility, and if they that decision is going to shape the judge's ruling on the sentencing, and there's no room for error here. There's no room. You know, we could potentially be sending somebody to prison for life when actually they shouldn't be going to prison for life. That's not to say they shouldn't be going to prison at all, but they potentially shouldn't be going to prison for life.
No.
And, you know, so there's no, you know, and, you know, like, like you were saying, you know, you mentioned about that case, because we were talking about obviously that baby that got killed, didn't we? And you were saying that, I can't remember what was that case that was mentioned in that book, where she,
Neil Pelker.
Yeah, she went to prison and she ended up killing herself in prison. Well, that's what we are. That's the gamble we're taking. That is what's potentially at risk when you get it wrong. There's no room for error. This is somebody's life that we're talking about. And potentially, so like in Sophie or Emma Jane's case, there is a young child that is going to be growing up potentially without her mother, unless this can get this can get overturned, like in the in Sally Challen's case. But even still, you know, she's even if it's she it gets changed to manslaughter, she's still missing out on a long time of a child's life, you know. So she's been punished enough. Why do we want to deprive her of that time with her child unnecessarily, extra time with her child? Why would anybody want to do that? There's no room for error at all.
Just to be clear, you know, obviously you and I both feel that the verdict in this case should have been manslaughter. And obviously in real life, she was the murderer. And in the programme, it was a manslaughter verdict, which I feel was the right verdict.
Yeah.
I think you agree, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I agree. And I think it's right for women, I think. They are, they're the one that's pushing for an acquittal.
Yeah.
And I don't think acquittal's the right option. I think manslaughter should be the right option.
Because we do believe that she was being abused by Ryan. And that had a major part to play in his killing and the complex trauma that she has suffered throughout her whole entire life has also played a role in this case. But we also feel that there needs to be some kind of accountability from Sophie in this case.
She's not completely removed of accountability at all. There is an onus of responsibility on her. Because ultimately, you know, she did have a responsibility to her own child, who wasn't this boy, this partner's child. She had a responsibility to safeguard that child from the environment that she ultimately had chosen for herself. You know, she was never in a position to get into a relationship when she instigated the relationship to start.
I think there was possibly for Sophie choices that she could have made throughout her life course that could have changed.
Yeah. Like the drinking side of things, like we said, you know, that was, you know, she, you know, we know, you know, a lot of the time people need to, unfortunately, you know, many addicts need to hit rock bottom before they get the help that they need,
the help that they want, you know, before they
because unfortunately, it's, as far as the brain's concerned, the drink and the drugs is doing a good job at numbing out, and all they don't want to do is feel that emotional pain.
Sophie was aware of her.
Yeah.
She was aware of her responses. Mm. And when we are aware of those responses, it becomes our responsibility
to
do something about them. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, we would all be walking around attacking everyone every time we had a look that triggered us and this, that, and the other. Yeah. And, you know, being trauma-informed is not about allowing people to just get away with hurting other people because of our trauma responses.
Yeah.
Understanding where it's coming from, but it's also understanding that we need to be responsible for our trauma responses too. Otherwise people would just be things left, right and center, wouldn't they?
It's like you know, when you go, and there's obviously, I think rights for women are fighting this one as well, and again, I don't agree with it, an acquittal, because at the end of the day, she did still take a man's life. And she chose to, whether she felt safe going out, and there's loads of people that don't, I don't feel safe going out in public now, but I don't go out carrying a weapon.
I do think there are probably cases where somebody can take a life and there could be, acquittal could be on the table, but I don't believe that this is one of them.
No. Yeah, but it's like if you go out with a weapon, unfortunately, there's a chance that a fatality could happen, So nobody, that's why it's a crime in itself, should never go out with a weapon, because there's always a chance that an accident could happen, a loss of control could occur. So, to avoid that from happening, you don't, no matter if you don't feel safe going somewhere, you don't go there. You don't go there thinking and think, oh, I know, I'll just take a weapon with me just in case I need to use it. We don't do that. So from that perspective, if we don't feel safe going somewhere, as an example, well, our responsibility is to make better choices, different choices for ourselves, not that. So we always have choices into such in certain circumstances. And if we choose the wrong one and it results in a lost life, then that needs to be taken into consideration, like in this case. Well, thank you, Jen.
Okay, got season one to talk about, yeah.
Yeah. So that'll be next week. Well, thank you for listening, and we shall see you on the next episode.
Thank you for tuning in and being part of this vital conversation. If you feel inspired to take action and support women, girls, and children affected by abuse, please visit the show notes in Kate's bio on UK Health Radio. There, you can register your interest in becoming a certified trauma-informed expert, specialising in topics that address this ever-growing crisis. Together, we can shape a safer future for those who need it most. Until next time, stay strong, stay informed, and remember, you are never alone.